T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The following is a special KMOX sports presentation. Welcome to Chili's Week in Hockey.
Blues continue the battle. Grabbed by Bozak. He centers. They score! Jaden Schwartz!
This series has shown so far that the momentum doesn't matter.
Schwartz into the middle. Schwartz shoots. He scores! Hat trick! A playoff hat trick for Jaden Schwartz. And a You've Got a Hat. Throw it at your radio. Sticks are down. Blues get to it. O'Reilly takes it to the wall. Bring out the Zamboni. And bring on round two.
They're a heck of a team. Like, they're big boys that are playing really good hockey. They're emotion players. So, yeah, do as good a job to be physical on them. But I think be disciplined, be composed on them.
All right. How we feeling? How we feeling? Dallas Stars.
I'm feeling amazing.
Are you?
Already.
You had some depression a couple of days ago when you found out it wasn't Nashville because your hatred was so strong.
Well, right, because I do hate the Nashville Predators, and I love to see the Nashville Predators lose, ideally at the hands of the Blues, but, you know, it's always fun to watch the Predators lose. And now we're taking on Dallas, and you know what? I hate Dallas.
Doesn't it feel better, though, to know that Nashville lost in the first round? Didn't even get a taste of the second round?
Are they going to hang a banner that said, like, we made it to the first round?
We made it into the playoffs. Although, I had a great tweet to Tom Timmerman the other day that he said, you know, now that Winnipeg and Nashville are out of the playoffs, the St. Louis Blues have home ice all the way through the Western Conference Finals. And I said, well, doesn't that mean that we won the Central? And I think you should put a banner up for that.
You should put a
Tom
banner
Tom just
up
ignored
for that.
It. I guess it's because my name's on Amy Mark's scores, right?
Well, I mean, I am the president of the Tom Timmerman fan club.
Or Shady, Creeper Stalker
Shady
Club.
Shady Tom T, as we call him.
Well, welcome in, everyone, to Chili's Week in Hockey. She's Amy. I'm Alex. Mike Anderson in the house as well. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you now, previewing game number one, round number two, tomorrow night here in downtown St. Louis. And if you've been living under a rock these last couple of days, which you pretty much have to not know this, it's the Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues. Going back to the regular season where Dallas beat the Blues 3 out of 4 times. Yes, everyone's still talking about Jamie Benn and his success against St. Louis. I'm going to throw this at you right now, Amy.
Okay.
Where are your nerves going into this series, knowing what the Blues just did to Winnipeg?
Oh, the nerves have been mitigated by the final 15 seconds of game 5 and the first 58 minutes of game 6.
I appreciate you prolonging that answer so I could look up what mitigate meant. but now that I got it, I agree with you. Look, I've been asked by friends, family, fans for the last 48 hours, ooh, what do you think? Are you okay with Dallas? I don't have any nerves anymore. Like, after watching what this team just did to the Winnipeg Jets, the nerves are gone. Like, this team right now plays a style of hockey that you want in the playoffs. How many years, Amy, have we watched this Blues team play in the playoffs and say, oh man, the game's just not there. It just doesn't seem right. They've fallen in a series and it's like they just couldn't get to that next level. Well, as you just mentioned, with 15 seconds remaining in game number 3 or game number 5 against Winnipeg, I'll even go back to the 20-minute mark, to the puck drop in Game 5 of the Winnipeg Jets. There's just a feeling with this team that they can't be stopped. So that's why Nashville, Dallas, to me it didn't matter. I think the opposition should be a little more nervous about playing St. Louis than St. Louis should be worried about Dallas.
Well, you hit the nail on the head with the feeling about this team. It doesn't matter what you did in the regular season, so long as you did enough to get into the postseason. We saw that with the Tampa Bay Lightning and Columbus Blue Jackets. It doesn't matter what you look like on paper. You look at the Blues team of 2000, the President's Cup winners. That team was stacked. That team, if I can compare it to a baseball team, was the 2004 Cardinals, right? Many players have said that the 2004 Cardinals were the best Cardinals team. And of course, we saw them get swept by the Red Sox in the World Series, even though that team on paper was incredible and throughout the regular season was incredible. This Blues team, to me, has that special feeling that the 2011 Cardinals had, where they got hot at the right time. And when you look at championships teams and successful teams, you have to have extraordinary outliers that make your team special. You look at Jordan Binnington. That's an anomaly in a season to have a rookie goaltender come in and play historically well. You look at Berube and his message and the way he was able to get the ear of a locker room that was wallowing in the bottom of the standings. That's an anomaly. That's an extraordinary outlier. You look at guys like Oscar Sundquist, right? They have to have career years. You have to have a few guys having career years. Ryan O'Reilly is having one. Oscar Sundquist is having one. I think the Blues are getting the best version of David Perron. All of these factors, which add to just having a strong roster, give me a really good feeling about this Blues team going into round two.
Well, it's so funny, too, because the storyline in round two, at least from what I've interpreted from fans, Ben Bishop, who we'll talk about a little bit later tonight, and Jamie Benn, who we'll talk about a little bit later on tonight. But it's funny, Amy, I looked back on the four games this season, and yes, Jamie Benn does have 39 points in 39 games against St. Louis. In his career, he scored 5 goals in the last 2 games in this season against St. Louis, but neither Benn nor Sagan or Radulov should be a concern for St. Louis. The biggest concern for St. Louis in this series going to be the defense. Can you believe it? In 4 games, they've had 13 points against the St. Louis Blues. So we talked so much in the regular season about how the Blues defense was the reason that they went on that surge and they jumped back into offense. Well, you're going to be dealing with very, very good offensive defensemen in Klingberg and Haskinen. You got rough guys like Roman Polak, former St. Louis Blues. Their defense is going to be a key in this series, just like ours was against the Winnipeg Jets.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I wrote down my top 2 concerns with the Dallas Stars. They're obvious, and they didn't include the defense, so now I've got a third. Obviously, I wrote down that top line of Sagan, Benn, and Radulov. Combined in their 6-game series versus Nashville, they had 7 goals and 18 points, and they averaged about 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Each guy did. Sagan had 2 goals, 6 points. Benn, 1 goal, 6 points. Radulov, 4 goals, 6 points. You have to shut down that line. And I think if you shut down that line, you effectively shut down the linchpin of the Dallas Stars offense. And then my number 2, or I guess I should say my number 1, was Benn Bishop.
Yeah.
Vezina candidate, Benn Bishop. And this series, this Dallas Stars team will rise and fall with the play of Benn Bishop, and the Blues have got to get in his face, got to get in his crease, make him uncomfortable.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Bishop. We'll talk about that top line for the Dallas Stars with Joe Vitale. He joins us next. We're also going to have Mike Hyka of the DallasStars.com, the beat writer for many years. We'll get his thoughts on this series, and of course, we'll get into what the hell happened in San Jose last night. Alex Ferrario, Amy Mark scores with you. Chili's Week in Hockey, 2 hours of hockey talk until 10 here on KMOX.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back in. Alex and Amy with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Plenty of hockey talk to get into. We'll dive into some of the other games. By the way, you got a Game 7 going on right now, and I know everyone's wondering, when will we know what time Game 2 is on Saturday? Well, you'll know that after this Game 7 wraps up, when they can officially put it out there. Tom Timmerman of the Post-Dispatch said earlier this afternoon that you'll either get an afternoon or a night game on Saturday. That's what the two are slated, and Boston and Toronto is going to be the other one. I think it's either like a 2 or 2:30 start and then a 6 or 6:30 start. So one of those two, but we're going to have to wait to find out after this one.
And watching this game with the Washington Capitals and Carolina Hurricanes, the biggest question for me is I can't decide who I want the Blues to play in the Stanley Cup Final, Washington or Boston?
Well, it's just problems we all deal with, right? What do you think, Joe? Who would you rather play in the Stanley Cup Final? Are you an optimist like Amy?
Good evening, guys. You know what? I would rather play the Washington Capitals for the pure excitement. But I get back to, I gotta get back to what Tom Timmerman reported. Apparently, so he told us that it's either going to be an afternoon game or a night game. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Well, that pretty much breaks it down.
Well, luckily it's not a morning or a late night game, right?
It's a morning game as opposed to...
I'm really glad we didn't get the 9 a.m. or those midnight ones, really.
Yeah.
Like
in the Brentwood Men's League, an 11 p.m. start.
I'm really glad we didn't get hooked up with that 11:37 p.m. puck drop.
When I see Tom and tomorrow at the ring, I'm going to say, geez, Tom, thanks.
You know, it's the perfect way to start a hockey game. You have a game 7 wrap up, and then the Blues start game 1 3 hours later at 2 a.m. It's the perfect way to do it, right?
I mean, the 8:45 start tomorrow might as well be midnight. Holy cow, these are late.
But, Let me tell you
understand
something.
Why the league does it, but oh well.
Yeah, well, Joe, we appreciate you hopping on as always here on the Joey's Week in Hockey segment of Chili's Week in Hockey. But Joe, I gotta admit something to you, buddy. I put a recorder in your house after Dallas beat Nashville. And you found out that the Blues wouldn't be playing Nashville in round 2. And this is, for our fans, what Joe Vitale sounded like.
Here's a little news flash. It's not funny. In fact, it's pretty freaking unfunny.
That's how angry Joe Vitale is, because he can't go to Nashville for round 2.
And that's where I punched the hole in the wall, just like Andy Bernard. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was fired up. I was feisty. I was mad. Yes, all of the above. I thought Nashville would have been a great matchup. And you know what? I was excited to go hang on Nashville. Who wouldn't be? I know you guys would probably hit the road, a close little route for you guys right down south there. But you know what? It is the way it happened. And you know, I think the Blues will match up well against Dallas as well.
Joey, I asked Amy if she wanted a road trip with me for 9.5 hours to Dallas for one of the road games. And she told me no. What kind of hockey fan is she?
Dude, that's to your credit. She probably would rather just run there and then talk about marathon running the entire way anyway.
And wear a medal all the way there.
Technically, yes. I said I would fly there and meet him there. I would rather pay for a ticket on Southwest than spend 10 hours in the car with Alex.
Okay. Well admitted. Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Well, Joe, give me your thoughts just on the matchup with the Dallas Stars. Amy and I were just talking a couple of minutes ago about, you know, the storylines of Ben and Bishop and the defensemen for how mobile they are. But I would say this is about as even of a matchup for St. Louis as what Winnipeg was.
I think it is. And I think that, you know, for me, one thing still jumps out of the page for Dallas, and maybe not something that maybe did in the first half of the season, at least not for me, but speed. They have a lot of speed. Yeah, Fox, Dickinson, Como can get up and wheel. There's one other one I'm thinking I'm missing in the middle there. But, you know, aside from that top line, everyone thinks that, you know, that this Hintz is the other one who can wheel. The top line is great, and we talk so much about the top line, and now they got those three stars back together with Radulov, Sagan, and Jamie Benn, and they're going to be a threat, and they're going to be a threat. But I think that when we first saw these guys earlier in the season, it was really about one thing. Shut down that top line and give yourselves a chance. I watched that last series against Nashville. That line's very good, but they have some depth. They have some guys on that second, third line, you know, they can get up and skate, and they can wheel, and they can wheel around the ice. And I think the speed, Cogliano, they acquired him from Anaheim, you know what I mean? And so different players that they got at the deadline, where Zuccarello is another one who can skate. So different players that are going to add that speed element to Dallas Stars' game. So I think that's probably going to give the Blues a little bit of trouble. I think that's probably the Dallas's biggest threat. You mentioned the mobile defenseman. You know, three maybe are closer to the best mobile defenseman still in the playoffs right now with Lindell, Haskinen, to lead off a couple right there. And I think that, you know, the goaltending situation, it's kind of a toss-up for me. You know, as good as Jordan Binnington's playing, you got Ben Bishop, who is just this absolute monster in the net physically, and he's been shown to steal games. He's having a great playoff series. You know, obviously the finalist for the Vezina Trophy again this year, so he's having a career year. And I like to say that the St. Louis kid does struggle against his hometown team with all the distractions, but he doesn't. He's come in this year. He's proven that he can play against the Blues. He can come to St. Louis with all the distractions and still play very good hockey. So, again, this was the national matchup we were hoping for. We knew we'd match up well. We got the Dallas Stars. It's going to be tougher. But I think as far as evenly matched up, I think it's right there up with Winnipeg as far as when you look at every different situation, special teams, forwards, defensemen, goaltenders, coaching, the whole bit. Aside from broadcasters, it's pretty even.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, you guys are the gold standard. It's almost not even fair. It's just a race for second place.
That's right.
Joey, do you want a gold medal from Amy for you as a broadcaster?
You know what? I wish they gave us those foil Superman tarps.
Uh-huh.
And I would just wear that to and from. I don't know what those are called. Or if they serve any purpose other than just to show off that you ran a marathon. Apparently they keep your body heat in, but it's like 90 degrees out, so I don't know where your body heat's going. I don't know.
I thought he was going to say a foil hat.
So I can get better reception with my headset. Thinking KMOX comes in a little bit better. So, Joey, we've talked about the threats that Dallas presents, but what specific aspect of the Blues style of play do you think matches up well against Dallas?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty good question, Amy, and I think that we're never really going to know until the game one. Now, leading into it, we can only really look at what happened this season, and so I think until game one happens, I think we're going to see some adjustments that will happen. Well, we'll know in game two. This is what they got to do better. This is what they're going to use against Dallas. For me, though, based off everything that's happened this year and how the matchup has gone, I think something that needs to happen in this series that maybe it's one of those things like, so Jamie Benn and this whole line is something that's been talked about a lot and something that's going to be brought up a lot, and it's going to be something to keep an eye on this series. You know, Jamie Benn's been a thorn in the Blues side, not just this year, but in the years past. Everyone remembers when he was stepping up Petrangelo, kind of shoving his head down. He just has this way against the Blues. Patrick Kane is another one. Patrick Laine for some parts of this year. Sometimes individuals just really match up well against the team. Jamie Benn's this guy. Now, I think, personally, and it'd be interesting to see how Craig Berube deals with this situation here, but in order to get Jamie Benn, you know, irrelevant from this series, he almost seems to be, and I remember playing against him, he's one of those players that really thrives the more emotion he puts into a game. So for Pat Maroon to go out there and to bark at him and start chirping him and sticking him off the faceoff, yelling him in warmups, Jamie Benn, to me, he's a gamer. And he's always been a gamer. I think that he's a player that really thrives in those situations. Sidney Crosby is a player that comes to mind. The more you get involved, the more you stick him, the more energized they get in the game. To me, kind of leave him alone. Maybe don't talk to him as much. Don't get engaged with him as much. I remember the game he came here. Again, he started hitting. I think the Blues were up in the game. He started hitting. I think he had a cheap shot on someone. Then he comes down. He gets a goalie. Then he gets a tip goal. And before you know it, he gets two goals on the board. And out of nowhere, he just comes to life again. Leave him alone. Just kind of let him do his thing. He's going to try to get involved with stuff. If you can just kind of like make him just kind of quiet and patiently just ignore him, I think that's going to be an advantage in this series.
Well, and that seems to be what the Blues do best when they play their style of hockey. I mean, if you go to that Winnipeg Jets game six, Joey, it was what, six shots on goal through two periods of play. It was a boring style of hockey. And we talked about this so much throughout their 11 game win streak in their second half of the season. If the Blues play a boring style of hockey like they did against the Winnipeg Jets, where they're not initiating hits, they're not doing the extracurriculars, they're just playing their own style of hockey, I think that sucks the emotion out of the game for the opposition, and they have nothing to cling on to, right?
I agree. I mean, look at that Winnipeg game, Alex. It's a good point. I mean, that's a do-or-die game for Winnipeg. I mean, they looked pretty lifeless. To me, it did not seem like they had much going there, and I know the fans and even the players, you know, heckling or, you know, criticizing how the team responded in that game do-or-die situation, but you know, it's one of those situations where as a fan, yes, you can get frustrated by it, but I remember it as a player, and I will stick to this. The Winnipeg Jets wanted to go out there, and they wanted to win that game. They wanted to impose their will. They wanted to do all the things that you're supposed to do, right? All those cliches you bring to the game. They wanted to come with energy. They wanted to come with grit. They wanted to win the battle in front of the net. All those things they wanted to do. It's not that they didn't want it. It's just that the Blues style did not allow them to get there. Go back to, you know, one of the games, I think it was game three when the Winnipeg Jets came to town and the Jets won 6-3, I believe it was. They changed up the neutral zone system. The Blues came out very flat. It wasn't that emotionally they weren't ready. They were ready. They wanted to go up 3-0 in a series, but the Jets just had a different style. They had a different coaching technique in that neutral zone that really just kind of made the Blues suffer. So to your point about playing that boring style, that's something that they're going to have to do, and it's going to take the leaders in the room. It's going to take a mature group to stick with that program. I think the Blues played that kind of boring style in the last series. But what's interesting about it is they played that style, but they were also finding themselves up in the game. And it doesn't always happen that way. I think it may happen this series where they're going to play that boring style, but it's going to be a 0-0 game, or it's going to be a 1-0 game they're going to be losing. That's when you really get tested. That's when you really see what kind of character you have. That's when you really see what kind of patience you have and the leadership you have. Can you stick with that boring style and know that it's an investment and know that it's a 3-period game or it's a 7-game series? So maybe it doesn't pay off right now, but it will pay off at some point. The Blues were so good at it a few years ago when they went to the conference finals. I see spurts of it. I see really good things out of the Blues doing it this year, because any way you can take the emotion and just energy, suck it right out of your opponent, it's a good thing. And the way the Blues are doing it is just by playing that simple, straightforward hockey.
Joey, the Dallas Stars' penalty kill is at 100%. The Nashville Predators were 0-15 in the series. Meanwhile, the Blues' power play is sitting at just over 26%. How important do you see the Blues' power play in this series?
It's very important. And I was on earlier today and with Tom Ackerman, and we were talking about it, and I said, I think this is going to be the key to the series. And I know that Dallas Stars, that stat's, you know, very alarming. That jumps out at you. Wow, 100%. To me, you got to kind of really look at the Nashville Predators, too. I mean, their power play was atrocious all season long, and it didn't change when it went to the playoffs. Everyone thought this was always a switch that's going to happen, or somehow their Stars were going to figure it out. Nashville power play struggles carried through the playoffs, and I watched a couple of the games, and they never looked in sync. I don't know if it was just the guys can't think for themselves, or maybe it's overcoaching. I've heard from rumors of some players around the league that the coaches are maybe too involved, where the players lack a little creativity because they're always kind of like robots. Whether the case or not, I'm not really sure, but their power play was not very good. So I think the Dallas penalty kill did look good because of that reason, A, and B, the best penalty killer is your goaltender. And Ben Bishop played great in that series. He played great throughout that stretch. He made some big saves. He takes up a lot of room. Power play is a situation where you're going to have a lot of offensive zone time. So the goalies necessarily don't need to move so much all the time. And they're kind of like in their little zone. And I think Ben gets in those zones, especially when he's killing a penalty. So for the Blues, it's going to be very important this series to beat Ben and to beat this Dallas Stars penalty kill. And I think that as we get closer, and I don't see this series being much different than Winnipeg. And I think I called it at the beginning of Winnipeg series, I don't know if we're going to score more than 20 or 22 goals and win this series. And I don't know how far off I was, but I can't really see the Dallas Stars series happening any different. It's just going to get tighter, and it's just going to get tighter. Well, if the goals are going to get tighter, they're going to be few and far between, especially when you have these penalties. So when you go out there, you may only get one power play a night. You may only get two. To go out there and get one out of the two power plays, I mean, that's going to be huge, because then you rely on your kill to maybe kill off one or two, and then you just stick to 5-on-5 hockey. And 5-on-5 hockey, I believe the Blues can beat anyone. I really think it's always going to come down to special teams. And if they can get a couple goals here and there on that power play and they can stick with that strong penalty kill, I think that's going to be huge.
16 goals, that's what was scored for the Blues in that series, Joe. So you were pretty darn close there.
Hey, there you go. That's quick math. Thanks, Alex. Yeah. I said 20, and people were kind of giving me weird looks, but I just – It had that feel to it, and it had that kind of like just that low scoring old school style of hockey. And I really think that it's going to take maybe 20 again for this series, because at the end of the day, whether this is the game, the way the game's evolving, or whether this is the game's always been, the goaltending is just, God, it is just so important. I mean, you can never underestimate, you can never say it enough. I know what people compare it to pitching and all kinds of great, it is. I mean, this is an important position. And for the Dallas Stars, they are where they are right now because of Ben Bishop. He's the number one reason. Yes, they have other reasons, but Ben is the number one reason. The Blues, truthfully, Jordan Binnington, he is up there for being the number one reason why the Blues are still in this situation. I mean, I know I look back at this Winnipeg series, there was that time in game 5 where we were down 2-0 and we're heading into that third period. And the biggest goal of this series, I still think, was that Ryan O'Reilly power play goal in that third period to lead things off. That, to me, shifted this series, because if he doesn't get that goal, we go back to 5-on-5. I can't really see us going back on the power play the rest of that game. I don't know if we win that game. Then we're coming back to St. Louis down 3-2, and then you never know. But it was Jordan Binnington in that second period that kept that game a 2-goal game. That was really important to lead up to that Ryan O'Reilly goal. So to me, it always comes back to that goaltender. Just keep your team in a position to win every night. Ben Bishop didn't do that one time. I think it was game 2 or 3 last series. We let a couple weak ones up just under his blocker and they ended up losing that game. Jordan, to me, throughout the entire series, he didn't really ever leave the Blues stranded. I know that 6-3 game, kind of, it seems like it did, but he will always cut to the very end. The Blues had a shot And, you know, I don't know, again, I don't know if a lot of those goals were goals, considering I thought he played very well in that game. So the goalie matchup is going to be big. I mean, you mentioned special teams. That's going to be important. The goalie matchup is going to be big. And this is going to be fun to watch because there's two different goalies with two very different styles. Jordan's kind of that springy, poised, aggressive goaltender. Ben's going to play sit back a little bit more. He relies on his big body to take up a lot of room. He doesn't, I don't think he moves as quickly left to right, but then again, he doesn't really need to because he's so big. But he's a goalie. He can get rattled, and the Blues can get in his kitchen. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Well, if the Dallas Stars fans learn anything from the Winnipeg Jets fans going into this round, they'll learn not to chirp Jordan Binnington and say he looks nervous on the ice, because that just didn't pay off very well for them in that first round. Joe, man, we appreciate you hopping on with us as always, buddy. You've been crushing it this season, crushing it in the playoffs, and I know you're amped up for round two to start.
Hey, guys, it's always a pleasure. I mean that. It's always great talking. You guys have an incredible show, and I mean that sincerely. I love coming on here. I can't wait for tomorrow night to keep this thing rolling, and we'll just see how it goes.
Thanks, Joe, and it's called a Mylar blanket, FYI.
You were sitting on that one, weren't you?
She was sitting on that for 20 minutes.
You know, all that stuff about you guys being awesome, I was really just talking to Alex.
Yeah, we know. We all know, Joe. Don't worry, buddy. All right, man, have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Amy.
There you go, Joe Vitale, one of the best. Amy, we got Ken on the line, who I believe you said Boston and St. Louis, you wanted to see the matchup, right?
Right, because I feel like we can redeem that Bobby Orr picture that has been cemented in our minds and on our souls.
That's what Ken's got. Ken, what's going on, buddy?
Hi, yeah, I just got on out of work and turned on the radio, dropped in the truck, and I heard you guys say that, and I thought for sure everybody would say Bruins because that's a rematch. Well, I don't know if that was the first season. I think they played the Canadians in the Cup, and then the second season, the Boston Bruins. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it was the third
second
season.
And third. Yeah, they played Boston, third. Or the Canadians in the first two, and Boston.
Yeah, Canadians
in
the first two, Boston in the third.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But you guys probably weren't born back then, but I was 11, 12, 13 years old.
Amy might have been. I really don't know what age she is, Ken, but I am.
But anyway, that did a lot for making hockey in St. Louis.
Yeah, awesome.
And the Boston Bruins series, it made everything. Derek Sanderson and those guys, it just made everybody want to play hockey around here.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And you know, I don't see many of my friends from that time period anymore, but occasionally we have, and we all played baseball and football and basketball, but we sit down and we start talking about the hockey, and, you know, I'm the only one that still lives around here, but I said it's just still madness. People love the Blues, and I think that series had a lot to do with it, and I would love to see that rematch and see some highlights from that series.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I tell you what, not just the rematch between the Blues and Boston, but how about the way that the Boston sports world has just taken ownage of the St. Louis sports world. So we'd like to see a little rematch and a little retribution on that one. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about how to handle Jamie Benn. I think I got a secret to that. We'll hit on that next on Chili's Week in Hockey.
Now, more of Chili's Week in Hockey on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
Klingberg leads the rush over the line for Jamie Benn. On the power play with the Blues on the penalty kill. Another 50 seconds. Ben shoots and scores. And the Stars have regained a two-goal lead with 2:49 to go in the second period. And Ben continues to terrorize the Blues.
Man.
Well, he's a good player. We got guys too. I'm sure they're saying the same thing. So plays the game, plays a good hard game. But we can match that. He's got some pretty quick line mates that can make plays. That whole line has been dangerous. But, again, I just said it. You know, we handled that wheel line pretty good last series. So I think we're ready for the task.
That's the Blues captain, Alex Pietrangelo. Alex and Amy back with you here on Chili's Week in Hockey. And he makes a good point there, Amy. I mean, at one point for about three games, so I guess I should say about two games, Line A and Wheeler and Shifley, or not Line A, it was Shifley, Wheeler, and Connor had the Blues number. But in Game 5 and Game 6, they shut those top line players down. And I think Petro hit it on the head with that. Shut them down. Why can't you shut down this top line that includes Jamie Benn?
Well, and if you want evidence that the regular season doesn't mean anything and the regular season record, the head-to-head matchups are irrelevant once you hit the postseason, you look at Patrick Laine. Mm. You look at that. You look at what he did against the Blues in the regular season, and then you look at what happened in the postseason. So I think you can throw out the head-to-head matchups between Dallas and the Blues, not only because the regular season is irrelevant at this point, but also because you look at the team that the Blues have become. The Blues are still getting better. They've been good for a long time now, because if you look at January 1st, everybody talks about that date, January 1st or January 3rd or January 7th, what have you, when the Blues were at the bottom of the standings. They have been good now for half the regular season and the first round of the playoffs. They've been good for longer than they've been bad.
Well,
so they've established that they're a good team and they're getting better.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but here's what David Perron said about dealing with Ben.
Well, that's why we got Vladdy. I'd like to look at Vladdy's stats too on our side. I think he's done pretty well against Dallas. Those guys are going to get chances. Of course, whoever's playing against them has a big job, but at the end of the day, they will find chances, and we just got to try and limit them, make it as uncomfortable as possible for them on the ice, and that's the way you can do it.
23 points in 27 games, 16 goals, 7 assists for Vladimir Tarasenko, 10 of them even strength, 6 of them on the power play. This season, Jamie Benn against the Blues, 4 even strength goals, 1 on the power play. But all 5 of his goals came in games 3 and 4 against St. Louis. So you shut him down in games 1 and 2. And if anybody wants to use the excuse of, well, it was before that, you know, the owner called him and Tyler Seguin out. Well, no, that's not true. It was afterwards. And Ben and Seguin had good seasons against St. Louis, but they locked them down in games 1 and 2.
Yeah. And shout out to Brett Barcheski. We were talking, again today, about the career numbers of Tarasenko and the Stars and Jamie Benn against the Blues. And as you mentioned, Benn has 39 points in 39 career games. 19 of those points were goals. Vladdy has 23 points in 27 games. 16 of those points are goals.
So when you look at it, against the Nashville Predators in the first round, Jamie Benn had 6 points, which was tied for the team lead with Sagan, Radulov, and Klingberg, but he had 1 goal and 5 assists. It was 4 goals for Radulov, 2 goals for Tyler Sagan. But I will go back to the regular season for Jamie Benn, Amy, and against the Nashville Predators, he played 5 games, the same amount of games, actually 1 more than what he played against the St. Louis Blues. And again, this is in the regular season. He played 5 games and had 1 assist. He was a -4, and he had 4 penalty minutes. So looking at the numbers and going back and looking at the game notes from that game or those games, he was penalized a lot, so he was in the box for some of the game. But it was the big bodies of the Nashville defenseman that kind of limited his chances. He's a guy that goes to the net. He's a guy that, as Joey mentioned, feeds off emotion. So the Blues need to find a way to shut that down.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a low key move, just like low key shade, I could say. Is that what the children say these days? Throwing low key shade.
I don't know. I still say dab.
If Pat, that's even I know that's bad. If Pat Maroon gives Jamie Benn the cold shoulder, don't let him get involved. Don't let him get emotionally involved. I can see that working, that reverse psychology. Pat Maroon giving Jamie Benn the cold shoulder. But then also, you look at the swagger that Jamie Benn has against the Blues.
Yeah, that's a big deal. You got to make sure that he doesn't get any
of
that.
You got to out-swagger
him. Yeah, you got to out-swagger him. That's going to be a term at the end of this round. We have Jim on the line. Jim, what's going on tonight, buddy?
Hey, guys. Hey, I was telling your screener, I went to the game, it was like 23 December against Calgary. Horrible. But then I went to the game in March against Tampa, 2 different teams. And here's my theory on a 7-game series. You got more time to game plan and fix a mistake than you do, say, playing them 1 week than playing them in 2 weeks. It's just like they did against Winnipeg. They're going to find a way to shut him down, because they really only have one good scoring line, if I'm correct, and it's his line.
Yeah, they have some other players that are really good. Joey mentioned Dickinson. You have Foxka and Andrew Cogliano. Let's not forget, as Mike Anderson talked to me a little bit ago, the former Anaheim Duck who seems to always find success against the St. Louis Blues. So they have depth.
But to Jim's point, that line of Sagan, Ben, and Radulov scored 42% of the team's goals during the regular season.
And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Parayko and Bouwmeester matching up with that Ben, Radulov, and Sagan line, just because, as Craig Berube likes to call it, it's an octopus out there. You think you've gotten around him, and then all of a sudden a 6 foot one or 6 foot four, heck, with Parayko, it seems like he's 6 foot nine with that stick and skates. All of a sudden, that comes flying at you.
And to the quick point about Swagger, Jamie Benn, right, he was winning the Swagger game against this St. Louis Blues team. Well, it's a different Blues team right now. And as Mike, are you okay over there, buddy?
I'm okay. I promise. Headsets all over the place.
And as Mike Babcock, the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, said before the Blues' big overtime victory against the Maple Leafs during the regular season, he said a team has to earn the right to have Swagger, and the Blues have earned that right. And I give the Swagger advantage to STL.
We'll give Swagger awards out at the end of the round two when the Blues defeat the Dallas Stars. See, Amy, you're starting to wear off on me, that optimism. I like it. We'll come back and talk about a newfound, I guess I should say, emergence for the Detroit Red Wings. We'll hit on that next as we wrap up hour one of Chili's Week in Hockey.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, final time. We only got a little over a minute before we need to break. We'll talk with Mike Hajka at the top of the next hour. But, Amy, the Detroit Red Wings finally are back into, well, I guess at least some people's minds, reason to talk about after Steve Yzerman announced as the general manager. I like the move.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Detroit be something in the NHL rather than a joke like they've been.
Well, the NHL needs a good Detroit Red Wings team, and I can't think of anyone better than Yzerman. Look at this. Since the Red Wings drafted Marty LaPointe in 1991, 10th overall, 26 years passed before they got a numbered draft pick in the top 10. All the way till 2017.
17.
17.
Is that that's a new year, actually, that people don't know about.
It's in between 16 and 17.
17. 17, everyone. No, I'll tell
26
you this.
26 years before you had a top 10
draft.
Yeah,
there's some nostalgia there, obviously seeing Steve Yzerman with that Detroit Red Wing logo, and he put together a great Tampa Bay team. I'll guarantee you this. He's going to find competitors. He's going to find he's going to get players that want to come to Detroit because he's there when it comes to free agency. I give it 5 years before they're back in the playoffs with Steve Yzerman. Maybe three. I'm giving five because they didn't do very well with drafting for a while. But I will also say it's kind of cool because they kept Ken Holland there as well. So
hot take, 2 years.
2 years before back in the playoffs. I'll give it five just because I don't agree with Amy. More to get into with Chili's Week in Hockey after the news. One more hour next on KMOX.
Now, more of Chili's Week in Hockey on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
Hour number two, Alex and Amy back with you. Some OT heroics needed once again in Game 7 as the Washington Capitals were up 2-0. Carolina came back. Washington took a 3-2 lead. They came back again, and now it's headed to overtime and to make it more enjoyable, which I don't think it matters. I think Carolina's feeling it right now, but it just showed TJ Oshie and his broken clavicle. I think that's the medical term as he was cheering on the crowd.
And the clavicle is also, I believe, next to the French horn in your standard orchestra.
Wow.
You play the French horn of the clavicle?
I know. I wish I had like a boo sound effect for that one. But so they got a game 7 with that, and we'll have to wait to find out what's going to happen in that in overtime. And then you'll start to know game times for the rest of this series between Dallas and St. Louis. But we are going to get the Dallas perspective of this series now as we welcome in Mike Hajka. He is the senior staff writer for the DallasStars.com. He's been covering the Dallas Stars for a long time. Mike, it is a pleasure to have you on with us tonight, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited about tomorrow.
Well, I think I should start off by saying you're probably just excited that it's not Winnipeg that you're headed to, right? Like you're coming to St. Louis where you know the weather's going to be at least decent.
I actually like Winnipeg. Early on in this process, the Stars went to Edmonton 6 years in a row, it was. And it was actually fun. It's such a big deal up there, and the entire city gets into it, that anytime we're in a Canadian city, I'm fine with it. So, but St. Louis is great too. I think I'm not a big fan of the playoff format, here, yeah. But it does breed rivalries. And, I mean, the fact that Stars played Nashville first and now they're playing St. Louis, those are, you know, those are teams that, that have a lot of bad feelings between each other. So I think that helps enhance the intensity of the game.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I know Blues fans in St. Louis are dying to get the series underway. How are the Dallas Stars fans feeling right now, Mike? Not only taking down Nashville in six games, but also playing the St. Louis Blues in round two.
Yeah, they, you know, it's funny. They have had a drought, three playoff appearances in 10 seasons before this. So when they won at home, that was the first time they've clinched a series at home since 2008, so 11 years. It was a big deal. The building was going crazy. You know, we get all the numbers and everything like that. The television ratings are going up. Just the exposure on radio and television and everywhere. People are excited. You know, the Texas Rangers are okay. The Mavericks didn't make the playoffs. So the Stars are finally getting a little bit of the spotlight in Dallas, and they're enjoying it.
Mike, some of the talk in St. Louis has been about the Dallas Stars and specifically Jamie Benn having both the wins advantage and the mental edge over the St. Louis Blues this season. You know, there's the famous scene of Jamie Benn sitting atop Alex Pietrangelo on the ice from a couple of years ago. Is there talk in Dallas about them having a mental edge over the Blues?
No, I don't think so. I think everybody's just so excited to be here that they're not getting cocky just yet. I will say that Jamie has played really well against the St. Louis Blues, and that can all change in one game or one series or whatever. But when you go through and look at the history of numbers and things of that nature, Jamie Benn has had a lot of success against the Blues. So I'm sure he's going to be a target of Blues fans, and I'm sure, you know, the Stars are going to look to him to carry them a little bit. He, you know, they talked in the first round just about Jim Montgomery putting Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Alexander Radulov back together. And, you know, he can change that at any moment in time. He's changed his lines a lot this year. But they really like that line. And right now that line's driving everything they do. That was a line that scored the overtime goal. You know, John Klingberg scored it, but Seguin, Benn, and Radulov set it up. So there's going to be a lot of focus on that line first and then also on Jamie Benn. When P.K. Subban was in Dallas, he got booed every time. And I imagine there's probably going to be a similar type response from St. Louis fans tomorrow night.
I think there's about 30 other teams' fan base that does that, too, every time he touches the
puck. I really appreciated that about the Stars fans.
That's the one thing we can all be on board with when it comes to the Dallas Stars fans. Mike, you mentioned that the Dallas Stars right now are just happy to be in this situation, the Stars fans, I should say. I would say that's one similarity between these two teams, one of the many similarities going into the second round of two teams that had altering moments in their regular season. The Blues obviously hitting rock bottom and making the move to bring in Craig Berube. But then you also had the moves that the Dallas Stars made. And on top of it all, you had the CEO basically coming out and calling out Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. How do you feel like this season has turned around for these guys in the locker room?
Well, it was an interesting process. Tyler said the other day that there's been a lot of meetings, and I believe that to be true. As much as Jim Leitz, you know, calling them out in the media was one thing, I think they were having all sorts of meetings with coaches, with, you know, management, with GMs, because basically Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin coming into this season were top six in the league in scoring for the previous five seasons. So Jamie Benn's already won an Art Ross Trophy. They were always around the top 10. Well, they started out the year and, you know, one, because of the scoring of other players in the league, and two, because they were behind their own pace, they were like 50th, 60th. And so Jamie Benn just, you know, signed a contract extension that pays him 9.5. Tyler Seguin will start a contract extension next year that pays him 9.8. And I do think that everybody was a little frustrated. They're like, look, we're paying you all this money, score some goals. And the problem was that it's just not that easy. It's not easy to score goals in the NHL. Tyler was actually playing really well and just hitting posts and just having all sorts of bad luck. And so, you know, all of that said, they had to go through the adversity of having those conversations of, you know, getting called on the carpet, you know, of putting extra responsibility on themselves. And I do think that they responded well to that. So now, you know, you've got players who have had to dig in, just like the Blues, I think, have had to dig in. And then, you know, you add to that, they didn't have a whole lot of secondary help scoring. You know, they basically have been saying all year they need a second line, they need a second line. Well, Jason Dickinson, who is in his first full NHL season, has gotten better as the year gone by. Roope Hintz, who spent half the year in the minors, has gotten called up at the end of the season, and then they traded for Matt Zuccarello. And so now when you're facing the Stars, and that's what Nashville found out, is that they do have a second line. You know, Dickinson, Hintz, and Zuccarello is a really pretty solid second line. And they ended up getting, you know, 7 goals total in the first round. And then Ben Sagan and Radulov, I think, may have had 9. So those two lines basically transformed what the team has become. And so now, instead of having to win every single game 2-1, you know, they can score 3 or 4 or 5. And that puts, you know, a little less pressure on Ben Bishop to be perfect every game. And it puts a little less pressure on the defensemen to be perfect every game. And it's just really helped. And, you know, they just seem relaxed now. They hit a point there, I think, in March or so, where they just started to, you know, gain confidence and say, hey, we're a pretty good team. And right now they believe, hey, we're a pretty good team.
Speaking of Ben Bishop, there's been a lot of accolades surrounding him and his Vezina year, as well as his stellar play in the postseason. How much of that praise is amplified by the ghosts of Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen?
Huge. And it wasn't just them. Went further back than that. But ever since Marty Turco basically moved on, the Stars have had a struggle in net. And now Lindy Ruff played a different type of hockey, so you guys saw that the last time the Stars were in the playoffs here. They were the top scoring team in the league. They were, I think, 26th or 27th in goals against. And so it was just a different way of playing hockey. And the funny thing is that for the first 12, 15 years of their time in Dallas, they were a defensive team. They were a Ken Hitchcock team. They were a Dave Tippett team. They had Ed Belfour. They had Marty Turco. And so this is kind of going back to their roots. And you know, I always go back to the fans and everything. The fans, I think, had very little confidence in the goaltending, you know, the last couple of years. And you guys saw that in that series where Kari Lehtinen gave up, 3 goals in about 6 minutes in game 7.
Yeah.
And so then the fans had that, you know, that just that feeling like, oh, my God, it's going to fall apart. It's going to fall apart. And now there's this real belief that if it's 2-1 or if it's going to overtime, that the Stars have, you know, the goaltender who can get the win. And you know, Ben has battled with injuries here and there, but boy, when he's healthy, he's been on top of his game. So they have a lot of confidence in the way they're playing, and they have a lot of confidence in their goalie right now.
Mike, final one for you before we let you go. We appreciate you hopping on with us tonight here on Chili's Week in Hockey. Again, Alex Ferrario, Amy Mark scores with you. Jamie Benn, that's the storyline, it seems, in St. Louis right now of how the Blues will handle Jamie Benn in that top line. From watching him in his career and watching him this season, what do you feel like it is that gets Jamie Benn off of his game?
Honestly, leaving him alone. Tyler's even said that. And he goes, don't poke the bear. Whatever you do, don't poke the bear. Because once he gets mad, he takes it to another level. So he's had a lot of games, and then that was part of the complaint earlier in the year, where, you know, he just has not really played with a kind of anger. Because I think it's hard. It's hard to play angry all the time. Maybe you don't actually feel angry all the time. So when he's just kind of there, when he's just playing a regular game, he doesn't have the same impact as when he gets mad. And, you know, that's maybe one of the reasons why he's played well against St. Louis, because he's always mad at St. Louis. I don't know. He's got a few battles going with defensemen or forwards or whatever. So, you know, the thing that honestly that, you know, allows him to not have an impact is when, you know, he just plays like a normal player, when he doesn't play angry. So that'd be my advice.
Well, Mike Anderson, our awesome producer, just told me, so Mike, after we wrap this up, I'm going to need to get the address so we can send some flowers, gooey butter cake, and some toasted ravioli over to Jamie Benn before this series gets underway.
some of that aromatherapy that you can put in this room.
Yeah, exactly. We'll give some bath bombs and whatever we need to make sure he feels comfortable here in St. Louis. Mike Hyka, the senior staff writer for DallasStars.com. Give him a follow at Mike Hyka, H-E-I-K-A. He'll be covering this Stars and Blues series all season long. Well, all series long, I should say. Mike, we appreciate you hopping on. Have a great night. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow.
Well, thank you for having me. We'll talk to you soon.
There you go, Mike Hyka. Mike Anderson, man, that is a great point. Flowers, gooey butter cake, some aromatherapy to Jamie Benn's
like
room.
Like a lavender pillow?
Yeah, lavender pillow. We'll call the hotel and make sure they leave some extra chocolates on his pillow. Actually, maybe we should send Joe Vitale out there to make some sourdough bread for him.
And a little sign that says, "It's been too long since you've been here."
Jesus. All right, we're going to break because someone needs to talk to Amy about these puns. We're done with it. More to get into next on Chili's Week in Hockey. Come on, Amy. Jeez.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
You know, it keeps you honest, and that's what you want. You want a guy that knows when you can give more and knows when you're at your best and definitely holds guys accountable.
That's Jaden Schwartz talking Craig Berube. Amy, have you learned your lesson?
I don't know. What lesson?
If you do one more pun, Mike Anderson is unplugging your I almost said controller. I don't know why I almost said controller.
Video game millennials.
Your microphone. It will be turned off. One more pun.
All right. Well, you don't want to turn my microphone off, Alex, because I have a hot take on Craig Berube and his coaching style.
I'm glad you didn't tie that into some pun there, but
and
go on.
Yes, this is not a pun. This is just facts. Craig Berube and Ronald Reagan
Really?
Stay with me.
No, nobody's going to stay with you. You're tying this into politics.
No.
This is where you get away from politics.
Craig Berube and Ronald Reagan have this in common. They are great communicators. Ronald Reagan was known as the great communicator.
And you remember this because you were at his induction ceremony,
I voted for him. That's right. And the New York Times gave him that title because he did something that Jimmy Carter didn't. He spoke to the American people. He looked in the camera and he offered optimism in a time of crisis. He was the exact opposite of Jimmy Carter when it came to the way he communicated with the American people. And one of his famous moments is when he said, "Don't let anyone tell you America's best days are behind her." Craig Berube's moment was when he walked into the locker room and tore the standings off the wall and told the team that they are a playoff team. That was his Ronald Reagan moment. He communicates with this team in a way that many of the players haven't even experienced before. David Perron said this morning he's never had a coach that communicates with the players the way Craig Berube does. He goes into the locker room every single day and asks how things are. He talks to the players. We see it when the players are stretching after practice. They're at center ice. They're sitting in a circle. Craig Berube skates around, taps each and every one of them on the shoulder. Every drill at practice, Craig Berube's in the middle of it. He barks at the team, but he also praises the players. He's in the thick of things at all times, and he communicates in a way that I haven't seen in my career covering hockey, and I think is new for a lot of the players. He's the great communicator.
Well, first of all, we're tying it to Ronald Reagan.
Nerd!
But I will agree with your point, because David Perron was spot on today talking about the communication of Craig Berube. Here's what he had to say.
He's around a lot in the locker room asking how things are every single day, basically on a daily basis. He's open to conversation. He's open to a tough conversation that, like I mentioned before, with me when he scratched me in December. And then I don't think I've ever had a conversation with a coach like that before. So it was very interesting, but it was good. He was open to it, obviously, and he took it well. I took it well. We moved on, and I think he understands where I was at and all that.
I'll add on to what you said about him being a good communicator, and I'll say
great,
the fact that he...
Great.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeez. Sorry.
And wait, Ronald Reagan was not the good communicator. He was the great communicator. That's what Craig Berube is. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Wow. He just yelled at me for not using the term great. It's the no-nonsense that I think Craig Berube has with this team. And if you talk to any of these guys around, it's just the way that he's able to be brutally honest. And he said at his press conference this afternoon, he said, I loved that as a player. I loved coaches that would come up to me, say what needed to be said, and then just moved on because it made me play my style of hockey. It was simple. So the no-nonsense that Craig Berube does is what you see in the locker room. Everyone has been talking about that video after Game 6 when they won, where he walks in. It's a quick response to the game of, you know, blanking relentless, how he said after Game 5, or great win, boys. And then he jokes around with them. He said, practice tomorrow at the Mills, 1 p.m. Just kidding. Like, that's the kind of stuff that Craig Berube does that I feel like touches these guys that they haven't had in terms of a coach yet. And also what Perron said, I've never been talked to like that by being scratched. Meaning, David Perron's been a career guy to where it's you're in the lineup and we expect you to do this. Craig Berube's a guy, and I don't know this for sure. This is just my opinion because Perron's not going to get into the details of their conversation.
Right.
Perron's never had a coach that comes up to him and says, David, you're not playing the way we need you to be played. Sit out, watch it from the top, talk with the coaches, and then we'll get you back in when you're ready to go.
Well, and it goes deeper than that, right? You're managing people. A coach has to manage people. You talk about losing the locker room. You talk about getting a guy's ear. Well, what the heck does that mean? What that means is when a coach makes a move, like scratching David Perron or moving guys around on lines, he has to convince the player that the role he's asking him to play is vitally important to the team, and then that player is critically important in that role so that the player buys into the role. Because imagine a coach talking to a player, right? And he's either scratching him or he's moving him around. One of two things can happen. The coach cannot communicate well with the player, and then the player goes out and gripes about it, which sends a, you know, a domino effect in the locker room. Or the player buys into what the coach is saying and buys into that role and has a positive experience. Then there's no griping. I mean, you talk about, to use another Reagan term, the trickle-down effect of the leaders on the team, of the coach, and the way the coach sets the tone. That's what you're seeing. Craig Berube can take negatives, turn them into positives. He can show each player why their role and that player in that specific role is critically important to the success of the team. That's buy-in.
Well, it's simple, too. And it's simple in the words that he uses. It's simple in the stuff that he does. I mean, I was talking with Robert Thomas about this the other day, and he said he's never had a coach through juniors or when he was playing, you know, at peewee level. And he never had a coach that was talking to him every single shift. He comes off of a bad shift, Craig Berube's right there telling him what happened. He comes off of a good shift, Craig Berube's right there tapping him on the back saying, great shift, do this, do this, do this. Like, to have a coach that's always vocal, I think is huge. And I don't know if Mike Yeo or Ken Hitchcock was like this because nobody ever talked about it the way that we're talking about it now with Craig Berube. But it's as simple as the stick tap in a stretching circle after a practice. Mm-hmm. Something as simple as that of walking around and talking to the guys, great job, great job, great job, I think goes so far with these players. The same as to what David Perron was talking about of, look, I've never had a guy talk to me like that before. You respect that from somebody, but you also respect it because it's a former player. Like Kirk Muller,
right.
Kirk Muller
right.
had that locker room when he was the assistant coach under Ken Hitchcock. Like, it was so talked about how everyone loved Kirk Muller, but it's a former player. It's a former big player on a team, and it's a guy who's communicating with him at all times. And I think that's the secret to this with Craig Berube, but it's the simple approach. It's a trickle-down effect, Amy. I mean, you got to admit, the past 3 years with us covering this locker room, it's never been as simple as it seems with these players. Jordan Binnington, a quick one or two sentence guy that's all he's going to talk about. He's simple. Guys like Alex Petrangelo, Alexander Steen, these are simple guys that just have simple answers. Play your game. You play your best. They can't beat you. That's all Craig Berube preaches to these guys, and I think that's why this is going so far.
And you mentioned that he was a former player. And it's not just that he was a former player. It was the type of player he was. You know, he was a battler. He was a fighter. He had his teammates back. He was also on the squad and a big reason why the Washington Capitals made it to their first Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah. He's
so
a
he's
locker
been
room guy.
There. He's been there. And for, I would say, all practical purposes, when this Blues team gets to its Stanley Cup final, it's going to feel like the first one because it's been 50 years. And so I just think so much of Berube's personality, his demeanor, the way he'll...
Been 50-plus years.
Yeah, he'll bark at the players, but he'll also bark at the refs. And we've seen him bark at the opponents. He's so committed. Yeah. You feel that he has this team's back just as much as he had his team's and teammates back in his playing days.
Tell you what, it's interesting, though, because Jim Montgomery is the exact same with the Dallas Stars, a former St. Louis Blue, a former NHL forward, a former tough guy. He's a guy that can get the guys riled up just as much as Craig Berube can. So, again, another reason why this series is going to be so evenly matched between Dallas and St. Louis. Well, we had a Game 7 OT last night. We have one right now still in the overtime, first overtime, that is, 3-3 Carolina and Washington. But what the hell happened in San Jose last night? I got a few hot takes on that. We're going to hit on it next on Chili's Week in Hockey.
More of Chili's Week in Hockey on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
Face off one back to Burns. Oh, Pavelski was dropped. He's lying on the ice. And right away they're calling for the athletic therapist, and Pavelski is bleeding. And Cody Eakin's going to get five in a game here.
Here is a major opportunity now for the Sharks. They've got a five-minute major power play. They're down 3-0. But they can keep scoring goals on the power play. And they need to do it quickly. LeBanc, cross ice. Couture, shot, score! A lead to the right. Meyer across the line to LeBanc, rushing in. LeBanc to the corner. Behind the back pass to Erik Karlsson. He stops it, he shoots it, tip, score! Behind the back pass to Burns. Cross ice play. Here's Couture, winds up, shoots. He scores! An incredible comeback for Sharks hockey, and Logan Couture is mobbed by his teammates.
First of all, I didn't know there was an A in score.
S-C-A-H-R-S.
That's how, you change the wording when you get that more excited. Like, that's just how it goes, right?
Maybe. I think that might just be how he says. He says scars, like people say highway farty far.
True. He's got to be from St. Louis. Well, that was the sound last night from San Jose and Las Vegas. Basically, what happened, if you missed it, Cody Eakin cross-checks Joe Pavelski after a face-off with less than 5 minutes to play in the third period. Actually, no, I think there was more. There was less than 10 to play, wasn't it, in the third period? Just over 10, Mike Anderson's telling me. But basically, it was Vegas up 3-0. Eakin takes a cross-check to Joe Pavelski, and blood on the ice. Eakin gets a five-minute major and a game misconduct, so 5 and a 10, which put San Jose on that five-minute power play. They scored 3 goals in 4 minutes to tie it. San Jose takes the lead. Hold on, I'm getting this all messed up. It's 4 goals on the power play they scored in 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. They take the lead. Vegas ties it, sends it to overtime. San Jose wins it in OT. Now, the controversy was Cody Eakin getting the 5 and 10 to give them a five-minute power play. Amy, we watched this in the sports office before we went on the air. We talked about it. It wasn't a cross-check.
Well, it was a cross-check. It didn't warrant a five-minute major.
It wasn't a cross-check that warranted a five-minute major.
After the face-off, Pavelski was unbalanced. Right. He was tottering a little bit, and there was a cross check by Cody Eakin. It was right at the clavicle, right at the collarbone, the instrument of the day. And Pavelski started to fall back. I mean, it was obvious that he was teetering immediately after the faceoff. Then Paul Stastny, who was, since Vegas lost the faceoff, was going up high to the defense, right? Was skating up high, skated into the path of Pavelski. It was unavoidable. To me, it didn't look like Stastny did anything excessive except for skate through Pavelski. And it kind of looked like he not necessarily wasn't dodging him, but
well, and if you watch
pushed down a little bit, like to maintain his own balance to keep from falling.
If you watch the play, the official that was closest to it didn't call a penalty. It was the official on the opposite side of the ice that called the penalty, and they didn't even really see what happened on that penalty. But I truly believe it was a 5-10 because there was blood on the ice.
Oh, well.
And it was pouring out of Joe Pavelski's helmet.
Right, because Pavelski, what happened is as he was falling down from the Cody Eakin cross check, and Paul Stastny added extra weight, right, to the way Pavelski fell, the side of his face hit the ice, and it looked bad, and it was bad. And according to the series supervisor, Don Van Massenhoven, he said, the referees called a cross-checking penalty for an infraction that caused a significant injury. In their judgment, the infraction and its result merited a major penalty. And this is my issue with the NHL's disciplinary system. It operates on consequentialism, right? What is the result? When Evgeny Malkin swung his stick at the head of, who was it? Swung his stick one-handed.
It was Eric Staal.
At Eric Staal.
Or Raffle, that's right.
Raffle. He missed, right? So there was no injury. He gets suspended one game. But the way he swung his stick, the violence of the action and the intent to injure, to me, merited greater penalty. This, on the other hand, this cross-check by Eakin and the way Stastny fell, pushed on Pavelski, just seemed like bad luck. And if there was no injury to Pavelski, I doubt that anything would have been called.
Yeah, well, and I think if the blood wasn't pouring out, nothing would have been called. But again, if you watch that, which the argument should be, there needs to be a replay with something like that. You cannot just give out a 5-10, a game misconduct to a player late in a game as crucial as a game 7, just because of what is in front of you. Like, you have to be able to see what truly happened, because when you watch that play, yes, it was a cross check, but the cross check was below the chin. It never touched the face of Joe Pavelski. And when Paul Stastny did it, there was no intent of injury from Paul Stastny. Paul Stastny is the least likely person to commit a nasty penalty like that. It was a, you're in my way, get out of the way, I need to stop this puck, which essentially turns into Pavelski falling awkwardly on his head. But again, the refs should not dictate the outcome of a hockey game. Regular season or postseason, you should not regulate or dictate what happens in a game by throwing out a 5-minute penalty. Look, at worst, it should have been a 2-minute penalty on Eakin for cross-check.
Right, exactly, because his hands were up. His hands were high.
Exactly.
They were clavicle high.
And maybe give 2 minutes to Paul Stastny for an interference. I'm saying at worst here. At worst. But there is no way a 5-minute penalty should be thrown out in this situation. Hold on, Amy. We got Brett on the line who's got his take on this. Brett, what's going on tonight, buddy?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy. What's going on?
Nothing. I agree. It shouldn't have been a 5-minute penalty, but in real time, things are happening fast. It's understandable. So don't you think, like, on a play like that, the ref should be able to go to replay and fix that? Because it's a game 7 in a big moment that dictated kind of what happened after that, don't you think?
No doubt about it. Brett from Oakville. Great, great point on that one.
And that has started the discussion that should all major penalties have an automatic review.
Well, here's Jonathan Marchessault after the game.
I mean, I really hope that Joe Pavelski's okay. Obviously, you never want to see something bad like that happen, but it's a joke. Call it 5 minutes for that? That's, why don't you have a hockey replay or something? Change the whole outcome of the game. Like, seriously, what is that? It's so disappointing. It's like trying to get involved in the game. The game's not even close. It's 3-0. Call it 2, okay, but a 5 with something you don't even see, you just call the outcome. It's a joke. It's embarrassing.
I mean, it is. Mm-hmm. Honestly, Amy, it is. A game 7, an elimination game, a difference maker and you're going to call that penalty. You have to review, just like you'll review a goaltender interference, you'll review an offside that turns into a goal. Why the hell aren't you sitting there and saying, look, we need to make sure this is right before we go anywhere?
Right, and my two thoughts are that I don't like that the five-minute major was called basically because there was blood.
Yeah.
Somebody had to go to prison, especially, as the saying goes in movies, right?
Right, especially just because they said that they didn't see it.
And the result, and to me, the result is luck, because, or you could say misfortune.
Right.
But you look at Eakin's cross-check, or you look at Paul Stastny falling over Pavelski. What happens to Pavelski's head is outside of their control. And so you have to take into account intent. So I don't like the fact that it was results-based. My second thought is, at the same time, the Vegas Golden Knights let in four goals.
Yeah, I mean, that's four. That's the biggest thing for me. It's like, look, you can sit here and complain as much as you want about the officiating and how that shouldn't have been a five-minute. At the end of the day, you were 0-4. Or you were 4-for-4 on the penalty kill up until that point, and then you allowed four power play goals in 4 minutes.
And it highlights how the Blues killed off Robert Thomas's double minor in Game 5. The Blues did what they needed to do when they were shorthanded for 4 minutes, and then you have their comeback. So at the end of the day, the Golden Knights shouldn't have allowed four goals.
I'll say this, Gerard Gallant, that was kind of a poor coaching move, in my opinion. Like, why wouldn't you take a timeout once that power play happens? Like, you know it's going to be 5 minutes. You know your team's up by three. You know the momentum's on San Jose's side. Call a timeout and be like, guys, look, this is the game right here. Stop it. And as much as I think that shouldn't have happened, I can't sit here and be like, you know, like people are with the Rams and the Saints game in the NFL playoffs, where they're like, oh, this game needs to be replayed. No, it doesn't need to be replayed. You didn't stop a five-minute power play. You allowed four goals. Shouldn't have been dictated, but you still should have found a way to kill it off. I'll end with this before we take our final break. Carey Fraser, I talked with him today, the longtime official in the NHL, the guy who comes on our show occasionally throughout the seasons. He said this about the play. The cross-check shove was at very best a two-minute minor. Most would allow it as a shove battle for ice, especially in the playoffs. Neither referee had their arm up, so an accumulative decision was made based on the outcome. It was actually incidental contact from Paul Stastny moving to the point that resulted in the bad fall. This was clearly an outcome-related decision, which in my judgment was unwarranted. So, look, Game 7, do not blow a whistle and give a five-minute power play in a tied game, or I'm sorry, in a game that is going to be an elimination game. Do not dictate a play. Let it dictate itself. It's the best way to look at it.
Yeah, and quickly, it did remind me of one of my best moments in Blues history, 1998. Jeff Courtnall rammed Jamie Storr in the Western Conference quarterfinals.
It's not going to work, so you're just going to have to deal with
it. I'm reliving it in my head right now.
Well, it's funny. I talked to Jeff Courtnell about that on the 50th anniversary. I thought it was going to work, and it didn't work. But at the end of the day, yeah, that was another play like that. But again, that's something that needs to be reviewed and shouldn't just be dealt out the way it was dealt out. We'll come back and wrap up Chili's Week in Hockey next on KMOX.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, it looks like we're going into double overtime. 30 seconds left. Carolina and Washington 3-3. That's right, Mike. Fingers crossed. Hopefully we get to double overtime. But we got game one of round two tomorrow night. Blues and Stars. Amy, we've talked with Mike Hajka. We've talked with Joe Vitale. We've touched on both the topics that I think. But it's going to be interesting. Jamie Benn, Ben Bishop. That top line against our top line, we'll see kind of what the Blues have in this first one.
And I think one thing that's going to separate the Blues from the Stars, finally, their depth down center. This Blues team is deep down the middle.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And it'll be interesting to see if momentum has an effect in this one, like it didn't have an effect in that Winnipeg series, at least according to every player that we talked to in that Blues locker room. So puck drop tomorrow night, 8:30. It'll be an 8 o'clock pregame skate here on KMOX. Chris Raby, myself, Amy Mark Scores will be part of the broadcast. Curbs and Joey with puck drop. Big thank you to all of our guests. Of course, to Mike Anderson, our producer, and Amy. Great stuff as always.
It's a great day to be a Blues fan.
We'll talk to you tomorrow night, 8:30 puck drop, 8 o'clock pregame skate, round two, game one here on KMOX.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.